Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Ugh, growled Jenny. I don't think I ever want to open another book on kids. Oh, I know, her pal Ella commiserated. When Corey was a newborn, I was always exhausted. When he was finally asleep, I stayed up to read about what I should be doing with him. Of course, chimed in Deanna. I had the mixed blessing of having Don's Aunt Sarah just down the block. Boy, did she ever pile it on with her advice. And nowadays, Jenny groaned, wherever you take a stroller, everyone's an expert on children. I can't even go to the grocery store without someone in the checkout line telling me what to do about teething or vitamins or something. Sometimes I just wish we could hibernate. Yes, I know, Ella sighed. It all makes you feel you're missing some sort of instruction booklet. From a parent's perspective, how can we sort through all the available information and find our most helpful resources? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest certainly has experience in this area from all angles, as a mom, as a grandmother, and as a pediatrician. Dr. Carol Brimberg-Schulman has been a pediatrician in private practice in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area for a number of years. She has two grown daughters and two young grandchildren, and she has visited with us before. Welcome back to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Schulman.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What would you say is the biggest misconception parents of newborns seem to harbor?
I think a lot of them feel that, first of all, there is only one correct way to do everything, that they have to know right away what that way is, that the baby will suffer irreparable harm if they don't do it correctly, and that the baby will know that they've done it wrong, and all of which is incorrect. Right?
I know two fabulous people. Both are PhD physicists, and they were quite worried because they were figuring out how they were going to change their newborn. And one was saying, well, one of us has to hold the book while the other one changes the diaper.
Exactly. Right.
What are new parents' greatest assets?
I think the fact that that baby is the most important thing in the world to them. And they love that baby more than anything else. And they're going to want to do what's right. And almost instinctively, they're going to have a sense of what's right for that baby.
Sometimes maybe they know too much.
That's true, because it can be confusing. And there's a lot of things out there. There's a lot of conflicting advice. And I think that mostly reflects the fact that for a lot of things, there really isn't one correct and one wrong way to do things. There may be many, many different ways, all of which are fine, and which parents can kind of pick and choose depending on their own parenting styles. So whatever advice they get, they really have to filter themselves.
And that must be very hard if you're inexperienced.
Absolutely.
If you, for example, haven't been the oldest of 10 cousins, so you haven't babysat, and here's this brand new creature, and it looks quite fragile, and it cries a lot, and then, you know, and what do you do, and how do you know who's right and who's not right?
It is very scary. First of all, remember, the baby is not going to know. I mean, the baby is not lying there judging whether or not you changed the diaper in 5 minutes or whether it took you 15 minutes because you didn't know which end was up and it took you, you know, another 10 minutes to put the tapes in the right place. The baby's not going to know that. The baby's just going to know that you love it. They're not going to be judging you. There are not police coming to your house to see if you're doing everything correctly.
Even your in-laws are not the police.
Even your in-laws are not the police. Exactly. Exactly.
Dr. Schulman, speaking of in-laws, do you have any suggestions for in-laws or Aunt Sarah down the street or the next-door neighbor who's thrilled you've just brought home a new baby, and they hover while you're trying valiantly to do whatever it is? You're trying, for example, to breastfeed a baby, and everybody's going to sit there and tell you how to do it.
I think the response that you have in large part has to depend on the relationship that you already have with these people. I think that obviously it's a difficult emotional time for everybody. I think you have to remember that it is your baby. You know what you've decided is best for your baby and what you want to do. And I think it's fine to make that clear to the people who are hovering around you. On the other hand, if these are people that you know and love, you have to do it in a way that's kind of gentle and makes them feel that, yes, you do value their caring, because that's what they're doing. I think often they're expressing that they care about the baby also. You value their caring. You value their advice. And you're definitely listening to it. But you don't necessarily have to follow every little thing they tell you to do or not to do.
Is it okay for a brand new young mommy to say, And now I need to be alone with the baby for a little while and take herself to her room and close the door.
Absolutely. And often you have to do that. Mm-hmm. And again, it depends often a lot on your pre-existing relationship with the person who's offering the advice, how gentle you have to be in saying, may I please be alone, or I'd rather you leave right now.
I had a situation. I was a brand new mother, and I thought I was pretty good. I was sort of nurturing and all this kind of stuff, and I had a wonderful relationship with my mother-in-law, who finally, after about a week or so, mentioned to my husband that he should really ask me when it was that she would be allowed to hold the baby. I had forgotten all about that part. Yeah. When parents bring their new baby home from the hospital, what is it that they should remember?
First of all, newborns are scary, but they're probably not quite as fragile as people think that they are. I think the only kind of hard and fast things that you have to remember are the issues that are important for safety. And there really are a few things that I think the obstetricians tend to hammer into to parents of newborns, and the hospitals will hammer into it. Yes, you do have to bring your newborn home in a car seat. Yes, your newborn should always sleep on his back. But other than that, there's a lot of different ways of doing things, and I think if people can relax and not be quite so frightened that every little thing they do is going to harm the baby, I think it'll help them just feel better about it.
I think a lot of stress creeps in when that new baby comes home with just two young parents.
Absolutely, and no owner's manual. It's not
no real owner's manual. Yeah. You can have a whole shelf full of books, but it's not the same as your gut feel, and also your experience is bound to be different from everything those books say. One of the things I remember being terrified of is supporting the baby's head and knowing that the middle of the top of that head was soft. And, oh, my God, what was going to happen if the baby bumped into the end of the crib or the bumper or the carriage?
Terrifying, isn't it? Yeah. And that's probably one of the biggest things that new parents come in. I mean, they're rubbing the baby's head and they're touching the spot on top and they say, what if anything sort of hits this? And we kind of have to remind them that that soft spot is underneath it is a very, very tough layer. It's almost like canvas. You'd really have to work very hard to damage it. And it's true of a lot of other parts of the newborn as well. You're really, unless you're grossly negligent, you're really going to have to work hard to damage that baby. And all of the precautions that we have in place now, like car seats and like being careful about how infants sleep, really are designed to keep that baby safe. And instinctively, I think most parents do know how to hold a newborn. They're not going to pick the baby up by its feet and, you know, swing him around. They just don't do that. So.
Who or what are likely to be the most valuable resources at this very stressful time?
I think, again, it depends on what your relationships are like with the people in your family, whether you're close to family or far from family. Do you have a network of friends that also have young babies? So I think for each family, for each mother and father, it's going to be different. And I think you can get different kinds of advice from different people. I think the kinds of help and advice that you might get from your own mother or from your in-laws might be very different from the advice that you might get from a sister or from the neighbor down the street. And again, I think it's appropriate to seek and listen to advice from wherever it comes, but to filter it yourself to see, well, what makes sense to me? Because the advice that my mother is giving me may be different than the way I want to raise my newborn. Things that new parents come in, I mean, they're rubbing the baby's head and they're touching the spot on top and they say, what if anything sort of hits this? And we kind of have to remind them that that soft spot is underneath it is a very, very tough layer. It's almost like canvas. You'd really have to work very hard to damage it. And it's true of a lot of other parts of the newborn as well. You're really, unless you're grossly negligent, you're really going to have to work hard to damage that baby. And all of the precautions that we have in place now, like car seats and like being careful about how infants sleep, really are designed to keep that baby safe.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on the advice conundrum.
As regular listeners know, Parents Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Fall is our major fundraising season, and we appreciate your support. Contributions can be sent to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. And we thank you.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Carol Brimberg-Shulman about the advice conundrum.
What do
about new kinds of professions that offer parents advice, like doulas and all that? Is that a good idea for parents?
I think for some people. I think some of them can be very helpful, but I think it's important to remember advice anywhere. It's really only as good as the person that gives it. A doula or other sort of parenting advice people, some of them really are very good and very helpful and very calming and know what they're doing. Others may not be quite as good or may have ideas about parenting that are really not in keeping with what your own ideas are. So I think you really have to, before you accept advice or help from somebody like that, I think you really have to talk to them and get to know them a little bit and see if you're comfortable with the kinds of things that they're helping you with.
Without making the doctor or themselves crazy, how can parents best utilize the pediatrician as a source of help?
I think one thing that is very helpful is for new parents, before the baby is born, to go visit several pediatricians so that they can find somebody they're comfortable with. It can be very unnerving to meet a pediatrician for the first time when you're bringing your new baby in and you have 5 million questions and this person rushes in. You've never seen her before. You don't know how she's going to respond. Is she going to think you're stupid because you're asking all kinds of questions? So I think, first of all, if you can meet the pediatrician beforehand, it's very helpful because then you can get advice about, well, what do I do if I have a question at 2 a.m? What are the kinds of questions where it's okay to call? Do you have a nurse that'll answer my question? So that I think if you can get some of those things in place beforehand, then you'll be more comfortable after the baby is born. Okay, well, my baby isn't feeding well today, or I don't like the color of her poops. And then you'll know, well, is it okay to call? And what time should I call? And will a nurse talk to me? Because we as pediatricians, we want to help new parents. I mean, we recognize that bringing home a newborn is very scary. We expect these kinds of calls. And we expect calls actually at all stages of life. So that's not a problem. We really are there to be utilized, either by phone or office visits or whatever. We don't mind that.
Do most pediatricians today, don't forget my children have been away from the pediatrician for a lot of years, still have a calling hour?
It varies. It depends on the practice. It depends. In some parts of the country, that's more frequent than others. And it varies, which is one reason why you really have to get to know your pediatrician and what her practice may be like.
Are there any tips, by the way, for parents when they're trying to decide how to choose a pediatrician?
I think, first of all, you want to make sure that this is a person who's qualified. And there are lots of ways of finding that out. The local medical society, the local hospital, you want to see if this is a person that's on staff at the hospital, that's board certified, that has the appropriate credentials. Obviously, that's important. Then you might want to ask friends and neighbors, who do you like? Why do you like this person? You need to make sure, and nowadays, that your insurance company will cover your visits to that person, and that's important too. And then when you've assembled 2 or 3 or 4 names, if you have time before the baby's born, make visits. Most pediatricians, you know, have times when prospective parents can come and do interviews, usually for nothing, for no charge. So you can talk to 3 or 4 people and see, well, who do you feel most comfortable with? Do you like that person's style? Do you like the way the office is laid out? And that just sort of helps you make a better choice.
Sometimes couples themselves are seeing a person who's a family practitioner. Wouldn't you say they would also want to talk to that person about
Absolutely. How
that person works with young parents? Maybe they will also want a pediatrician. You never know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, that depends on the area of the country. There are some parts of the country where family practitioners do a lot of pediatric practice, where they are accepted in the hospitals on staff to take care of sick newborns or sick children. There are other parts of the country where family practitioners really don't do a lot of pediatrics and where a couple might need a pediatrician, particularly if there's issues involving a very sick child or a hospitalized child. And again, that's something they would have to find out.
Now, it's interesting. We've been talking about knowing your own child, knowing your own child. Of course, this child is a stranger at the beginning. So how do parents sort of know their own child?
I think you certainly don't bring your baby home from the hospital and know her because it's just brand new to you. But very gradually, you do get to know that child because you're watching her every day, so that after a very few days, you'll have a sense of, well, what are my baby's eating patterns like? Does he want to eat all the time? Do I have to wake him up to eat? Does he wake me up? What color are her poops normally? How many times a day does she have them? So that just by observing your new baby, you are learning things about her every single day. And obviously, the longer she's alive, the more you learn. You're going to know a lot more about your 6-month-old and your 12-month-old and your 3-year-old simply because you've lived with that child. So that's really what I mean by knowing your child. Not necessarily knowing what's inside your child's head, because you may never know that, but you'll certainly be able to observe your child's temperament, your child's patterns. How does your child act if he's sick? How does she act if she's feeling good? These are things that you learn just by observation.
It was obvious recently when my 2-year-old granddaughter had her first ear infection that she wasn't behaving like herself. She was not having a temper tantrum, but that's what it looked like. She was screaming and stamping her feet, and that my son and daughter-in-law were looking at each other, and my son is a physician, not that kind of a physician, but he said, it could be throat, it could be ears. I said, I was going to say the same thing from my experience. And so they did take her to the doctor, but she had 2 times on that day before she went to the doctor where she had these, I would have said, gee, she could be having a temper tantrum, except we know this child, if she does have a temper tantrum, which she's quite capable of, it doesn't look like that.
Good. Good for him. So, I mean, I am always astounded at how well even parents of very young infants can interpret their moods. And I've seen parents bring in very young infants and say, you know, there's something wrong. I think he has an ear infection. And I'm thinking, nah, baby looks fine. And then you look in the ears and there's something going on because the parents knew. I remember very vividly a case from early in my practice. A mother came in with a 1-year-old child with a fever, and the child to us really didn't look particularly ill. We were thinking, well, this is just a virus. And the mother just kept saying, no, no, there is something very wrong with my child. She is never like this. She is never this quiet. There is something very wrong with her because she's normally very active. And thank goodness we listened to her. And this baby turned out to have a very serious form of meningitis.
Oh my
but
goodness.
Because it was detected early, she did fine. Actually, she's a college student now. She
oh
did
my.
She did beautifully. But it was a mother just knowing, and the mother was not educated. She was not sophisticated. She was not in the healthcare field. But she knew there is something wrong with my baby. And that really is knowing your child.
Just watching your child every day.
Exactly.
You know what's abnormal.
Exactly. Exactly.
In what kinds of situations should parents trust their instincts as opposed to seeking and utilizing advice like other pediatricians or other things?
I think you should always pay attention to your instincts. I think that it doesn't necessarily have to be as opposed to other advice or as opposed to what your pediatrician might say, but I think more as something that kind of goes along with it. So that if you have an instinct that there's something seriously wrong. You've called your pediatrician, it's late at night, and you're saying, there's something really wrong with my child. I'm not sure what it is. I've looked in the books. They don't seem to get very excited about it, but I'm very worried. And maybe your pediatrician is saying, well, I don't think there's anything the matter. You know, just do this and that. And your instincts are telling you very loudly, no, I know this is something the matter. That just might lead you to be a little more assertive and to say, maybe I should go to the emergency room. Maybe I should do something else. So that you're using your instincts as part of what else you're doing. You can reach out to your pediatrician. You can look in your books. You can get advice from other people. But if you have a voice inside you saying, no, none of that sounds quite right to me, you at least should listen to that. I mean, your instincts aren't going to be right 100% of the time. But again, because you know your child, because you live with your child, you've got to pay attention to what your instincts are telling you. And if they're saying, no, this is different than the books, this is different from what my mother-in-law is telling me, there's something else going on, that may lead you to pursue other avenues of finding out what's going on. I think this is particularly true about developmental issues. As pediatricians, we will often see a child for a 15-minute office visit and we'll say, how are things? And maybe it's dad and he's in a hurry and he brought the baby along and he said, nah, everything's fine. And okay, everything's fine. But maybe mom has a feeling that things really aren't quite right developmentally, has an instinct that thinks this baby is not quite right. Again, even though the pediatrician may not have picked this up on exams because they're brief and we don't always pick everything up, if her instincts are telling her, no, this is developmentally, this is wrong, this may lead her to pursue other ways of let's get this child investigated. Let's do a developmental exam. Let's look and see what else is going on. And this can apply to a lot of things.
You used the word assertive,
right,
which I would really like to see us stress because I think that's the one area parents need to learn if they're not good at it. I was never good at being assertive, except when it came to my children. You're assertive about their health. You're also assertive in the school system, or if you put them in a daycare program, you need to assert my child needs that bottle at 11 in the morning or whatever
agree.
It is.
Absolutely.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on advice for young parents, the advice conundrum.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, The Popular Voters Guide by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Carol Brimberg-Schulman about advice for young parents. I think we need to learn as parents early on that it's okay to be assertive no matter how professional the person is you're dealing with. You live with that child, and so it's okay.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And assertive doesn't have to mean aggressive or nasty or mean, but assertive, because most people will listen. If you say the same things enough times, people will listen. I don't know a pediatrician on the planet that would not listen if a parent keeps saying, "No, my child really is sick. No, my child really does need to be seen today." And you may have to say it three or four times, but I think we all eventually listen.
If a parent is saying that and receptionist or nurse or gatekeeper says, "I'm sorry, we're all out of sick visit times, we don't have it," should a parent then go to an emergency room, or what should a parent do?
I think, again, that depends on the whole business about instincts or feelings and knowing your child. I think if your assertiveness can't get through the gatekeeper, I think sometimes that's what you may have to do, because it's probably better to make an unnecessary visit than not to make the visit at all if you're really convinced there's something wrong with your child. Now, fortunately, most of the time, most kids are healthy and resilient, and most of the time it's going to turn out to be okay. But every now and then it won't. And I think you do need to stand up. You are your child's strongest advocate. And if that means an ER visit or an urgent care visit or whatever it takes, you should do it.
I think maybe that's one of the questions that parents can ask in first meeting a pediatrician. What if my child gets sick in the middle of the night, Friday night, and we're going into the weekend?
Very, very important. And that these are issues that we cover when we do our so-called prenatal interviews. We cover that because this is probably the top of the list of what parents want to know. What if my child gets sick at 2 in the morning? Where do I go? What do I do? Who do I call? Very important for parents to have all this in place before the child wakes up at 2 in the morning with 105 fever. Very important for them to know that.
Now, this is a little bit off to the left, but if parents have a situation where they're seeing a pediatrician who has a practice of several pediatricians, but there's also a nurse practitioner, and you've got a sick child or what you think is a sick child, and it's the nurse practitioner that you end up seeing and you're uncomfortable with that, what do you do?
It's a difficult question. I think that nurse practitioners, obviously, like all of us, can be variable in their skills. Some of them are wonderful, and I think that if you have a nurse practitioner in the practice, if you're comfortable seeing that person, if you trust her, I think there's not a problem with that. But I think if you see a nurse practitioner or if you see another physician in the practice and you're not comfortable, I think you have to follow up, either by seeing sort of upfront, "Gee, could I see somebody else? Is one of the other physicians available? You might want to try to do that." Again, I think it's variable. I think nurse practitioners can be fine, but I think if you are not comfortable seeing a particular person, that's where assertiveness maybe should play a role as well.
In today's world, young families travel an enormous amount, and of course, they've got their children with them. So you're out of town, your child gets sick. You need to plan ahead for that too. But what do you do?
I think it depends what it is. We actually, in our practice, we have a lot of people that do a lot of international traveling. And we'll sometimes get calls. It'll be what sounds like a routine sick call. My baby woke up this morning with a fever, stuffy nose, whatever. Often a situation where phone advice is appropriate. And then as they're hanging up, we find out that they're actually calling from Hawaii. Right, Europe. So, and so that's certainly an option if you're comfortable making calls to whoever your local pediatrician is. Because what can happen there is they can listen and give you advice about what to do. And if it sounds like something that needs to be seen, then they'll tell you, no, the child needs to be seen. And, of course, at that point, then you're going to have to, depending where you are, it may mean a trip to a local emergency room or to urgent care. If you're staying with family, they may have a pediatrician that's willing to see an out-of-town person. So I think it depends where you are and what the situation is.
It's interesting. I feel like for a number of years, I knew every emergency facility in every place we ever vacationed because there was somebody always sick. Well, this has obviously been a boon to parents and caring adults everywhere. But before we go, Dr. Shulman, could you suggest any resources for our listeners who want to look a little further into some of the issues we've been discussing?
I think one of the problems is there are almost too many resources out there. So I think parents do have to be very careful what they pick and choose. The American Academy of Pediatrics has a website which is really wonderful, www.aap.org. It has links to many, many different pediatric topics, including child rearing, immunizations. There's a selection of books that are published by the Academy of Pediatrics, which are listed on their website, and they are all wonderful. WebMD is another good, reliable website with a lot of, again, health advice, child rearing advice, links to other things. And, again, books, the American Academy of Pediatrics books are very good. Dr. Spock's book has been around for a long time because it's very good. And then there are probably 5 million other things out there that you really have to look at very carefully because some of them come with a point of view. There are websites that have their own advocacy issues that may or may not be correct. There are books about child rearing, everything from feeding to sleep, that are very political in the sense that you may or may not agree with their viewpoint. If you agree with them, that's wonderful. But if the parenting style is very different from your own, it's not so wonderful. So I think anything that you read, anything that you get online, you have to look at with a very large grain of salt because some of them may not be correct.
And it would seem also that nothing can replace some kind of support network.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Whatever you have.
You know, your pediatrician, your family, your friends. Very, very helpful. Ask. You're not necessarily going to agree with what people tell you, but you will hear different things, and they're often very helpful.
Well, as always, this has been a terrific pleasure to have Dr. Carol Shulman back with us with wonderful advice for parents and caring adults. So thanks so very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of The Little Book, a special book for parents of special kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That helps us a great deal. And mention show number 304. Please tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you're tuning in from. Our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available in all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. Just scroll down to the topic or guest of your choice and click onto the words Listen to Podcast below. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.